Welcome to another Kansas Policy Institute podcast. I'm Paul Sutar, your host. Today, we're with David Dorsey from Kansas Policy Institute. Hello, David.
Hello, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Now, today we have a rather complicated topic, but you're going to make it simple for us. We're going to talk about at-risk funding for schools. Tell me a little bit about what that is and sort of how you're qualified to talk about that, David.
Let's start with sort of my background, which kind of leads into this. I've been with Kansas Policy Institute for coming up on a year now. And before that, I was a public school teacher for 20 years. The last nine of those, I was in Topeka USD 501. And eight of those last nine, the last eight, I was a math interventionist teacher, which meant I dealt with a lot of students who were struggling with math. I taught at a school, Loman Hill Elementary, that was very had a lot of kids on free lunch, about 70 to 80%, and free lunch leads into the whole at-risk program. That's the funding mechanism for at-risk. So I dealt with these kids on a daily basis, a lot of them, 40 to 50 of them a day. And one of the things that got my interest is that I know that there's always been a lot of money going to at-risk programs, but I got particularly interested because I didn't see much of that money going to the kids who I felt were at risk. So one of the first projects I've taken on at KPI is doing a kind of an in-depth look at the whole at-risk funding, how the money is generated, how much is generated, what's it spent on, and kind of where do we go from here with it? What are some suggestions for change?
What is this at-risk funding and how does it work?
Well, I think I need to preface this by saying that currently the at-risk program as we know it no longer technically exists. It's been pooled together with all the other funding as part of the new block grant program or the block grant law. I think it's important to realize that at this point. However, it has grown so much over the 20 years of the program, it's still a very big amount of this block grant money. So I think that needs to be said first, but I think it also needs to be prefaced that given the fact that the block grant law will be sunsetted in 2 years and the legislature will be working on a new formula, I think, you know, given some other comments I'll be making later to kind of clarify it, it's pretty much impossible to think that we will go forward in the long term without addressing at-risk at some point. So having said that, the history of the law is, what makes at-risk kind of interesting and different from other funding sources is that it's pretty much been a court-driven form of revenue for schools. And that's not just in Kansas, but kind of across the country. And it's been around for, in Kansas, it's been around since 1992. Other states, it's been a little bit longer, some a little bit shorter. But it goes with the basic premise that economically disadvantaged kids are harder to educate and more expensive to educate than the non-economically disadvantaged students. So they've put this a fund together called At Risk, being that these students are at risk of not succeeding in school. It has grown immensely in the 20 years. It's what started out in 1992 is roughly $13 million statewide is now for the last full year of the program as it existed, 2013-14, it was right at $400 million. So we're talking about a lot of money here.
That's a big chunk of the total spending.
Yes, it is. And it's growing too.
Right. And that's the other interesting part of this is that over the years, whether through legislative action or court requirements, this amount of money has grown. Like you say, how much is it Wichita gets for their at risk? I think I saw like 70, almost $73 million.
Right. That's what they were getting before the block grant. And so, so actually that rolls into their block grant money too. So it's really still there. It's just kind of hidden now, or marbled, as I like to put it.
Right. And so basically the way it goes is if a child is on free lunch.
Correct.
Kansas is free lunch only. then they will receive an extra, the school district will receive an extra percentage of the base state aid per pupil
Correct.
for that child. How much is that percentage in the last full year of this program?
Well, the base there are, as I've said in a couple of my blogs, it's quite complicated, but the base at risk is 45.6% of whatever base state aid. So that's roughly about $2,000 per free lunch student that the school district gets.
That's a lot of money. And that's a big deal to the schools. And I can tell you from a parent's perspective, I raised six children who went through our local school district here in Kansas from elementary school right through to graduation. And numerous times during the early part of the first semester, I would get additional correspondence and even phone calls from school folks pleading with me to sign my kids up for free or reduced lunch. And at that time, I was working for the local newspaper, and I didn't really have the depth of understanding I do now. I just couldn't understand why they were insisting on that, because my kids, you know, they took lunch. I paid for their lunch. I mean, we weren't rich by any means, but we had the means to take care of that. But the schools were really relatively insistent that I sign up for that. I understand why now, because it's not just about getting my kids a lunch, it's about getting the school district a whole lot of extra money.
Correct. And it's the thing I find sort of disturbing about that is that really there's two aspects here. The first one is how the money is raised, and it's raised because you are a free lunch student. But that doesn't mean you're going to get served with that money. That's simply a proxy for serving economically disadvantaged students. I mean, in my personal experience, teaching in a school, day in, day out, seeing these kids over and over, you could pretty much tell who the kids were who were getting free lunch. But then you could also tell a lot of those kids were not anywhere near what you'd call at risk. I mean, they were doing fine in school. They just happen to be kind of like your experience. You might not have a lot of money, but the kids are still going to do fine in school. So that's also one of the reasons that I'm kind of taking this on, is there's really an essential disconnect between those kids who raise the money, so to speak, and those kids who the money gets spent on.
Right. And that's a function of the whole funding situation. That one of the mantras that I hear from the reformers, school funding reformers, is that the money should follow the child, which is in fact not what happens right now. The district will get the money, but that money doesn't even necessarily filter down to the school that the child that is helping them qualify for that extra money goes to. It goes into the district pot, and in most cases, that's where it stops.
Exactly. Yeah. And in many ways it's untraceable. And that's what I'm also finding out going through this, the whole at-risk program. I mean, as I said at the beginning, the program is raising $400 million a year, and no one's asking any questions about how this is getting spent.
Right.
And it keeps growing and growing. And then you've get basically the education, status quo. They're complaining that, that there is no more money for education. Education keeps getting cut, and they keep directing themselves toward base state aid per pupil. That seems to be the hook they're hanging their hat on. But no one ever mentions, well, how about this at-risk fund that keeps going up and up and up and up as more kids qualify for free lunch, which to me is another weakness of that using that proxy, is that the program really is a function of what the United States Department of Agriculture deems necessary for a child to become to get a free lunch. So the two things are completely, as I said, disconnected, yet they're married to each other regarding the funding.
Just the idea that a child being economically disadvantaged means that they are at risk, that just smacks of elitism to me. That, you know, a parent who, let's say, is a mechanic or a blue collar job of some sort and isn't making six figures a year, you know, that their child has a higher probability of doing poorly in school. That just seems elitist to me, and I'm not sure I buy that whole concept.
Oh, I agree absolutely, and I saw it every day as a teacher, as I said before. A lot of kids who are generating money, they aren't what I would call at risk at all, right, of failing in school, and yet a lot of kids who were not generating money, you could define them as having issues in school and being at risk. So there is a basic disconnect there.
Well, and of course, if you get into the court perspective of this, one of the things that to me was most interesting in the last couple of years, as we've been gearing up for this current round of battles, the most recent court case, is the attention that's been paid to the previous court case, and specifically to the Augenblick and Myers study, mm-hmm, that was used as the basis for the Supreme Court setting a funding level. And one of the most specific and credible critics of that methodology is now on the state Supreme Court.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Caleb Stegall. Yes, he wrote quite a piece that debunks a lot of what the court did in the original, the Gannon, I'm sorry, the Montoy decision, right, the original one that forced all the money onto the legislature to provide to the schools that Augenblick and Myers came up with. Well, let's say it was suspicious methodology to say.
Well, and I think Caleb did a really fine job of pointing out how far off that was.
Yeah.
And even beyond that, the legislature directed.
Actually, the legislature directed the legislative post audit to come up with a study. That's a long history, but they came up with a study too. And they had even their figures were very, very high as far as the at-risk kids. And, ultimately, Paul, the bottom line is, and I know, Dave Traubert, our president, says it all the time, no one knows how much money you need to educate students.
Right.
So every study you're going to see, to me, is essentially it's suspect on its face, because you're coming forth with an idea that I can show you how much it costs to educate anyone, whether they're at risk, low income, economically disadvantaged, whatever. There's a method out there to do it, and there just isn't.
Right. Well, especially when you're doing, kind of this cookie cutter, one size fits all kind of approach, where you just, yeah, each child is a piece of the overall general whatever, and the money then doesn't get back to them. It's the whole thing to me just seems like it has lots of problems. I personally am a huge proponent of having the money follow the kid and having school choice options, so that whole system becomes much more, self-healing, I guess you'd call it, where if the child is performing well, then it's good. If the child's not performing well, then there's a problem, and the parents have options.
Parents have options. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on in other states. Unfortunately, Kansas is not what you'd call on the cutting edge of education.
Oh my goodness, no. No, just about dead last in school
choice.
Well,
yeah, I've been showing that. Yeah, yeah, they are.
Well, David, your blog posts, I read through them in preparation for talking with you today. Mm-hmm. They are really excellently written. I would highly recommend them to readers who want more information. I would encourage people that this whole school funding formula, which puts about half of the state general fund, more than half, mm-hmm, into education, and that number has been growing over the years. This is a problem that must be dealt with. And one of the things that's absolutely plainly obvious to me is that the education lobby, I could use other words for them, but I'm a big believer in providing quality education. Like I said, I put six kids through the public school system here in Kansas. But I am not a big believer in the kind of smoke and mirrors approach that happens with a lot of this stuff. The only way that's going to change, Dave, is by having people understand these things and get in touch with their legislators and their local school boards, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think one of my takeaways from this is, as having taught for 20 years, I see kids who need extra help. That's not the purpose isn't to cut out what you might call an at-risk fund, What I want to see is the money actually getting to the students who need it the most,
Right.
rather than just being put in a big pool and distributed. I mean, I could go on literally for hours about how the districts allocate their money, and it just makes no sense at all, other than their marketing, like they did with you, to try to get more money into the system. But I would hope that, you know, sort of an outcome of the new formula would be a way to make sure that the money gets to where it was intended to get to, and really intended to where the courts had foreseen the money to get to.
Right. Right. Well, very good. I'll remind our listeners, if you want more information on this, go to kansaspolicy.org and read, as I said, some of the fine writing of Mr. David Dorsey. Thank you, David, for joining us today.
You're welcome, Paul. Thank you.